You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks again for having me.
Mark, do we have a special offer for our listeners?
Yes, for new subscribers only, VRTrader.com. That's VRTrader.com. And we have a 50% off for new subscribers, and the promo code is 2022 half off. And I always make the disclaimer, at least I try to, regarding that I'm no longer a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice. But we do a lot of discussion about the markets and stocks in our newsletter.
Bitcoin over $100,000, is the sky the limit on this thing, or is it setting itself up for a big crash?
I personally think it needs to pull back. I mean, the charts tell me it's extended. There were some alternate targets up to about 107,000, 109 that I saw on the charts that I came up with. There's some analysts out there, I don't want to mention the name, that came out in the news last few days saying they think in 2025 you could see $250,000 for a Bitcoin. On a technical basis, it broke out above that 73,000 level, which we've talked about on these interviews for a while, and I mentioned at the time that a breakout above that would get the thing moving. And my target was about 88 or 90,000, and obviously it exceeded that. So in technical analysis, you know, as a general rule, again, this is a general rule, you know, you break out above a certain level, you know, given some time, not necessarily a lot of time, but you tend to pull back to the breakout point, so it becomes like an orderly advance. You know, usually at the very end of big moves, when it's terminal, it just goes parabolic, goes straight up, and then crashes, and you never see those highs ever again. So I don't think this is a parabolic move, but normally I would expect a pullback, and I'd like to see a pullback into the mid-70s, which would be a nice correction. Of course, nothing atypical with what Bitcoin has been doing in recent years in terms of volatility. So ideally for me, and I'm not saying if it'll get there, but if it pulled back, you know, it doesn't have to be this week. It could be into the first quarter of next year. Pull back into this mid-70s would be a nice technical correction and then set up another move higher. I mean, that's sort of an ideal technical scenario. And obviously, you could continue running and, you know, I'll never see that pullback. But as a trader, you know, that would be sort of my hope and expectation. Now, if you're a long-term investor in Bitcoin, and some people are, you know, been in for a long time, and they think it's going to go to $250,000, and even you've heard stories of $1 million from some in recent years, and now with Trump supporting crypto, and a lot of, you know, politicians also supporting it, you know, who knows where the sky is the limit. You know, they have the amount of crypto Bitcoin that is every few years, and that reduces the supply out there. So ultimately, you know, it could see that kind of number. You know, I'm not saying next year, as one analyst is saying, but it could happen over time. So I've always been positive on it because the sentiment seemed to be always negative. But really the big story, you know, is this happened, you know, several months ago, we've talked about this, is when we had Larry Fink over, you know, from BlackRock, you know, I hesitated for a second, you know, get involved and make an application for an ETF for Bitcoin. Finally started, I think the ticker symbol is IBIT, and I think this past March that it happened. So, you know, when the largest money management firm on the planet, which is BlackRock, with trillions under management, of course, they must have friends in, you know, in Congress or in the regulators here in the U.S. But they must have been buddies with Gary Gensler at the SEC because he's always anti Bitcoin or crypto. Now he's out the door. I think he already resigned. But the fact that BlackRock was able to pass that ETF, that was it. That was a story. Because now it says, as I've said many times before here and others have said as well, it's a, you know, it's a given. It's a given now because if you have an ETF that creates, you know, that kind of, you know, opportunity or allocation, money managers all over the planet have to probably put some type of allocation into it, just as they do with gold or other sectors. It's just part of a balanced portfolio. So it becomes a big pool of potential buying. And that's really part of the reason why it's gone up. So I give the credit, really to Larry Fink and over at BlackRock for triggering this huge move. And then it all happened the first day, and it took off and pulled back and ran again and so forth. But it gave it legitimacy, just like the World Gold Council supported and promoted the GLD gold ETF many years ago. And once that went through, anyone who wanted to buy gold didn't have to buy gold. They could buy the ETF, GLD. And when that happens, the buyers or the money managers at the GLD fund have to go out and buy the gold to fulfill the orders that came in on the ETF. So that creates a buying pressure to the upside. So over the last, several years, even though gold's had its fluctuations, the wind was sort of at its back because of that GLD ETF. And I think the same thing applies now for the Bitcoin. So long-winded answer, the trend is your friend in Bitcoin, and you have to decide what your stomach can take in terms of volatility. And if you pay $100,000 and it dropped to $75,000 or so, can you live with it? And, there's what is known as dollar cost averaging, where you buy a tiny little bit, and you buy a little bit every month with a fixed amount of money, regardless of the price, and you sort of hopefully average your entry into it. And we also got to remember there's thousands of other cryptos out there. I mean, literally all over the place. And there are other, favorite names out there, like Dogecoin. We all laugh and call it the doggy coin, but that's the one that Elon Musk was talking about, and it's trading around 42 cents. So that's obviously a cheap alternative. There's XRP. In fact, we talked about this last week. That's the brainchild of a company called Ripple, which is supposed to go public. SEC has been giving them a ton of problems. So it was trading around 50 cents and got up to about 280, I think, in the last 10 days. So that was a hell of a move, for a cheap, crypto. Some claim this is a great crypto and it can go substantially higher. Ethereum is starting to catch up. It's sort of the cheap sister. It's only trading about $3,000-$4,000 a coin compared to Bitcoin. And those are just some of the top names out there. So I guess, they all sort of run in sympathy. So the question is, would I buy Bitcoin today if I was a new, new investor trader? And I would say probably very, very small because of my thought that it needs to pull back or should pull back a little bit. But I wouldn't ignore it completely. It's like saying buying gold. I mean, you buy gold here at $2,600. I hope that it drops to $2,000. If you think it's going to go to $3,500, $4,000 or higher. So you have to do, again, sort of a dollar cost averaging approach. And if you want to be a real stickler about it, you wait for the pullbacks and act accordingly. So as a trader, I tend to wait for pullbacks and buy and try to sell them to strength and, trade them a little bit. So I think I sort of covered the Bitcoin crypto landscape for you, I hope.
The stock markets, again, almost every day we see record highs. What's the story there?
I'm getting bearish. Of course, I've been accused of being bearish before. I just think it's overdone. I think there's a recession coming next year. And a lot of reasons I don't want to get into on the call, but I think a lot of things are going to happen. And the markets, tend to have a sloppy first quarter, particularly after a huge run like we've had. A lot of cycles come into play. I wouldn't be surprised if the market is real choppy or down into February or March of 2025. Whether it starts December 25th, 26th, or starts January 10th, I'm not sure. So I think one of the reasons is that a lot of people had huge profits and they want to defer their taxable gains until next year. So come January 2nd, a lot of traders are going to start selling and taking profits to defer their gains, which they won't have to pay for another year. And as far as the recession is concerned, it's real. I mean, the media completely discounts it, which tells me it's happening or it has been happening. I'm looking at the Dow Transportation Average, for example, which is historically a leading indicator, and key stocks like United Parcel Service and Federal Express are actually down. The the Chicago PMI, the Producer Management Index, Purchasers Matters Index, you know, shows a decline for the last several months. So, you know, a lot of inventory has been built up, and new products are not being produced as fast as people think they are. As if you look at the stock market, you think everybody's buying and selling, and new production is happening across the board eagerly, but that's not really happening. So even though I'm very bullish that Donald Trump is in, from, you know, political and socio point of view, because of all the nonsense the opposition has created in the last 4 years, and frankly, a lot of stupidity associated with it, but we won't get into that. You know, getting his appointees nominated, the fact that we are in a recession or coming into it or expanding, I think, a bit. And just think about it. I mean, the government, according to Trump, is going to be probably laying off a lot of employees, a lot of the money that has been spent, you know, which has been phony, you know, economic numbers that we've seen, has been because of government spending creating jobs and not necessarily in the private sector. So those jobs are going to go kaput, and that could help, you know, put a lot of other people into the unemployment lines. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening out there which, you know, is going to translate to a pullback, and whether it's severe or minor, and, of course, the other variables that are happening geopolitically, you know, with Ukraine and with Russia and North Korea and China. We can use, you know, we can run down the whole list here, and we could spend a lot of time talking about that. So, you know, the bottom line is a little cautious here. I wouldn't be chasing stocks. I would say, you know, Warren Buffett's been unloading his Apple computer. He's in the largest cash position, I think, in his entire career. I don't know what the number is, $350 billion or some number. I mean, this is the world's smartest investor. And if you've been tracking him since he launched this fund back in 1972 or four, best performance at anybody. So he's been lightening up. So I wouldn't get carried away. And, you know, I'm waiting for a nice sell signal trigger, you know, in terms of some volume to the downside to start putting on some short positions. So maybe it has to wait to Santa Claus. Or maybe, you know, slightly after. We're just going to have to see what the technical charts give us, because I don't want to jump in too early in case they want to take it up another leg here into the new year. So what might happen here is you may have a few days of instability or a little nervousness here this week or into next week. I'm just looking at some of the short-term cycles that I follow in the market. Then maybe another rally into Christmas or into the first of the year, and doesn't necessarily have to go to new highs, but we'll see. And then I'm waiting for a technical trigger, and if I'm correct, we should have a sloppy first quarter of 2025.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on in the crude oil market?
You know, it just sort of going sideways. If you just look at the charts, you know, I'm bullish on the industry because of, you know, Trump and opening up the spigots and allowing, you know, land leases or oil leases to resume and production to increase. And a lot of the oil companies have been making money, most notably Exxon and Chevron. We talked about this before, but also opening the spigots could, you know, depress the price too. A lot depends on what OPEC is going to do or not do. We still need oil. It's still in demand. It's not going the way of the dodo or anything, as all the environmentalists would have us hope to believe. So just, you know, waiting for some bullish trigger on the charts. So I'm just, you know, sort of neutral on it. I've been holding a couple positions, and I think ultimately it is going to take off again, and whether that's triggered, you know, by some external event, which I can't, you know, predict at the moment or speculate about, outside of war or something, which, you know, is still well underway. I mean, there is a war going on. No one really wants to talk about it. You know, it's a shooting war, you know, both in Israel and Ukraine, and there's stuff going on, and it just, you know, being ignored. And you have, you know, Biden out there in his last days in his office doing a lot of crazy things, like allowing U.S. missiles to be used against Russia. So, you know, I just hope it doesn't blow up, because if it does, you know, I guess it's good. To, you know, the stock market may like it, I guess, at a certain level. The defense stocks might like it, but it's not good for the state of the world. And, you know, maybe that'll trigger a move in oil if something happens there, and we'll get some movement because there's still so much of the world dependent on oil. So philosophically, I'm a bull. The charts are sort of saying neutral here, you know, waiting for some trigger. And the oil companies themselves should prosper. So you're probably better off looking at oil companies than oil itself. You know, particularly if they open the spigots, there's going to be more production, which means more profits for the oil companies. Even though prices may not be at highs, they're going to be able to do more and sell more and not be restricted. So, you know, I think owning, you know, an index which follows the companies, it might be a better play, and particularly some companies that pay some nice dividends in the oil sector might be something to look at as well.
Anything happening on the geocosmic front?
Well, we have some interesting stuff here. We've got a lunar cycle coming here on the 15th of the month, December 15th. We've got the winter solstice, the 21st to the 22nd, coming up. And, you know, the way I look at this stuff, the market tends to change direction around the equinoxes and the solstices. Nobody likes to talk about it, but, you know, the September, June, March, December period, often, you know, within a few weeks of that, you get market change of direction. So one of my thoughts about the market maybe nosediving after the first of the year might be part and parcel to the winter solstice, which comes in around Christmas. And, solar activity is really quiet now. I checked the spaceweather.com about that once. There's nothing going on a solar level right now. In fact, it's unusually quiet. So basically, those are saying sort of change of direction is in the works. So that's where I'm at right now. Be careful, you know, if you're a long-term investor and you've been in the market forever, so these comments are irrelevant, I suppose, because if you can ride out the COVID crash and all the other shakeouts we've had in recent years and still be a long-term investor, it's all sort of irrelevant. But I don't look at the markets that way. You know, I like to be ahead of the game here and try to play the swing. So so interest rates are the other variable. You got December 18th coming up, which is not cycles, but that's the Fed meeting that everybody's thinking the Fed's going to lower rates, which may or may not happen, and it's sort of irrelevant anyway. Because the real key is the 10-year treasury, particularly with regard to home mortgages and stuff, since a lot of the real estate people are hoping for a reduction in mortgage rates. So until we see, you know, the 10-year treasury start to, you know, rally, and, you know, that means lower interest rates, what the Fed does is sort of irrelevant. And, you know, the Fed does so many things, and we talk about this more in our newsletter than with regard to the Fed funds rate, which is, again, irrelevant. I mean, what the bond market, it's a tail wagging the dog. The bond market is really the market. What's the 30-year bond doing? What's the 10-year yield doing? You know, they pretty much are ahead of the Fed, and then the Fed sort of follows them or is forced to follow them. And what about the money supply? Is the Fed increasing the M2 money supply, decreasing it? Are they pulling other, you know, market shenanigans out there that they don't really talk about, or they're not even asked a question about? So the interest rate picture is really confusing and sort of irrelevant. And I think if we're going into a recession, the Fed's going to have to stimulate. And that probably means increasing the money supply in addition to ultimately lowering rates dramatically. But I think if they do something more in the stimulus area with regard to money supply and try to create inflation rather than try to deter it, then, you know, that might turn the markets back up again after a pullback early in 2025 or even mid-2025. So there's lots of it to watch here. And, you know, the Fed will be forced to lower rates, even though they're not the important factor. As I mentioned, there are other factors here. But as the recession hits, which I think, again, is coming, they're going to have to start pumping up the economy again and forcing money into the money supply. And I guess they'll come out with lower interest rates, which is more of a psychological factor than a real factor in terms of business. So people feel better when they hear the Fed is lowering interest rates. But again, they're going to have to do other things, and we're going to have to watch what the bond market is really telling us. So going back to your question on the cycle picture, we're in this time frame now for a possible change, and should be interesting into 2025. So stay tuned.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
I love it. Thanks for having me. Have a good week.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for the show, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.